This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
In Kenya, tensions between the government and the opposition continue to climb in the wake of Raila Odinga's self-inauguration Tuesday as the so-called People's President. On Friday, authorities arrested another of Odinga's allies, sparking protests in some parts of the capital. Meanwhile, the government continues to defy a court order to lift a ban on three independent media organizations.
That's Mohammed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. We'll have the latest from Kenya coming up. Also, French President Emmanuel Macron and Senegal President Macky Sall met today ahead of a global gathering on education in Dakar. And the United Nations warns the situation in South Sudan is getting worse as conflict has displaced a third of the population. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story, in Kenya, tensions between the government and the opposition continue to climb in the wake of Raila Odinga's self-inauguration Tuesday as the so-called People's President. Today, authorities arrested another of Odinga's allies, sparking protests in some parts of the capital. Meanwhile, the government continues to defy a court order to lift a ban on three independent media organizations. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's three largest broadcasters remained off the air for a fourth day Friday despite the High Court ruling the day before that the government must reverse the suspension. Authorities cut transmission for the media outlets Tuesday as they prepared live coverage of the opposition swearing-in event. The Kenyan human rights activist behind the legal challenge, Okia Omtata, attempted to serve the court papers to the government's communications authority Friday. Omtata spoke to VOA about what happened next.
I was personally marked and I was not allowed past the gate. I was told I had instructions from above not to allow me past the gate, nor to allow the court order to be served. So what I did is I pinned it on the wall, a copy of the order, but they ripped it off.
Omtata said he has no choice but to bring the matter back to the court Monday.
Well, the only clarifies issues for me now. I now know that what we are dealing with is not a failure to comprehend the law, but a deliberate move by the government to violate the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of Kenya and to operate outside the confines of the law.
The Communications Authority has not commented on the ban. Omtata told VOA he was able to serve the remaining court papers addressed to the Attorney General, Interior Minister and Minister of Information, Communication and Technology. The ruling Jubilee administration accuses the media of failing to heed its advice not to air Tuesday's opposition swearing-in. In a statement released Wednesday, the day before the High Court's ruling, Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i said the stations will remain shut throughout ongoing investigations into alleged complicity in what he called an effort to subvert the government and spark violence. Odinga has refused to accept the results of an October presidential runoff, which he boycotted. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner. In a statement Thursday, the U.S. State Department expressed grave concern over both Odinga's self-inauguration and what U.S. officials called the government's action to shut down, intimidate, and restrict the media. Muridhi Mutiga, the International Crisis Group's Kenya researcher, says a spat between the Kenyatta administration and the media will go on.
He came into office seeming to have an axe to grind with key elements of society, including the media and civil society, and that has continued and persisted. We've seen media houses being denied advertising, which is a crucial source of revenue. We've seen continued attempts to legislate against the media. So I think it will continue. There will continue to be push and pull between the administration and the media.
President Kenyatta gave a televised speech at the Kenya School of Government Friday. At the end, he gestured to the journalists and spoke in Swahili.
Sasa si nyinyi mzime hiyo mavitu yenu na muende. Kazi imekwisha.
Now, why don't you switch off your things, pack and go? Your work is over, he said. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
French President Emmanuel Macron and Senegal's President Macky Sall met today ahead of a global gathering on education in Dakar. Macron is on his sixth visit to Africa since taking office last year. Journalist Sophia Christensen is covering his visit to Dakar, and she spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson today.
So the purpose of Macron's visit is to strengthen the ties between France and Senegal. So this morning he was welcomed by Senegal's President Macky Sall in the palace, and they signed first a contract announcing the creation of a new Franco-Senegalese university campus and also a new agreement facilitating volunteering exchanges between France and Senegal. And they also finalized a loan by the EU and the French Development Agency for water and sanitation programs and a contract for the installation of 50,000 off-grid solar panels in Senegal. The two presidents then visited the popular Dakar neighborhood of Han to inaugurate one of 17 new middle schools opened by the Senegalese government. And Macron is now taking part in a high-level panel on education at the GP conference this afternoon. And he will be in the northern town of Saint-Louis tomorrow to discuss climate change.
This is the President Macron's sixth visit to Africa since he took office last year. How is he viewed in Senegal?
So the streets of Dakar were lined with cheering supporters this morning, and people in the crowd said they felt honored by the president's visit, and they viewed this as an important moment for Senegal. Macron has said many times, and the most recent in a speech to students in the University of Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso, that he wants to create a new dynamic between Europe and Africa. And Macron himself does not seem to be an unpopular figure here, but of course, like in many African countries, there is also a lot of resentment towards France as a former colonial power and the influence the country still seems to have on its former colonies. And there are a handful of small but passionate movements in Senegal demanding an end to what they see as French neocolonialism, and they have been very open and vocal about their discontent with Macron's visit.
Mr. Macron and Mr. Sall will be at the conference sponsored by the Global Partnership on Education today. What is the goal of the conference, and how do most African countries stand in terms of meeting educational goals?
So the aim of this conference today is to attract funding for education in developing countries, from primary school all the way up to university level. It is attended by seven African heads of state, high-level representatives from donor countries, international organizations, NGOs, and rumor has it that pop star Rihanna will also be attending as the ambassador for the GPE. The aim is to raise over $3 billion by 2020 to finance education in developing countries. And France is expected to cover up to 10% of this target. In Africa, there has been a remarkable improvement on providing education. But despite this, the continent remains the continent with the highest rates of exclusion. And in sub-Saharan Africa alone, over a fifth of children between the ages of 6 and 11 are out of school, and half of these are girls. So many challenges are still ahead, particularly as Africa is facing a demographic boom that will put even more pressure on its existing education structures.
That was journalist Sophia Christensen in Dakar speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson. At least 90 migrants are reported to have drowned when a boat capsized off the coast of Libya this morning. The International Organization for Migration spokesperson Olivia Heaton says 10 bodies are reported to have washed up on Libyan shores. The dead include 2 Libyans and 8 Pakistani nationals. IOM is working to get more details of the latest tragedy on the Mediterranean Sea. The deaths come as the organization released its latest figures on migrant arrivals in Europe. My colleague Kim Lewis spoke with reporter Josephine McKenna about the boat incident in IOM's migrant figures.
The International Organization for Migration says at least 90 migrants are reported to have drowned when a boat capsized off the coast of Libya today. Now, this is very distressing news, and the UN body said that 10 bodies are reported to have washed up on Libyan shores near the town of Zawara. 8 of the dead were Pakistani and 2 Libyan, but the organization is trying to get more details of the tragedy and find out exactly what happened to the others and hopefully identify which countries they came from.
Do you think this is another trend regarding migrants in terms of these being Pakistanis?
Well, it's interesting to see that in this particular case, there were many Pakistanis among the victims, at least 2 Libyans, and we had 2 survivors also swim ashore, by the way. But there has been a recent increase in the number of Pakistanis trying to make these boat crossings from Libya towards Italy. And it's not clear whether those victims that we saw today were Pakistanis living in Libya or simply transitioning through Libya in order to make their way to Europe. Now, last year, 3,100 Pakistanis reached Italy by sea, making them the 13th largest nationality among migrants. And the IOM is also concerned that trafficking networks are very quick to try and identify new markets, new routes, and new nationalities in what is continuing to be a very highly fluid situation, and trying to sell migrants the idea of Europe as a kind of paradise. This is of concern. Of course, we're still seeing many numbers of sub-Saharan African migrants trying to make that crossing as well, but we're not sure how many of those may have been among the latest victims of this tragedy.
Also, the IOM has released some recent numbers regarding migrants. What are they saying?
We had around 6,600 people crossing the Mediterranean just in January this year. About two-thirds of those, around 4,200, arrived in Italy. That's a 10% increase from the previous year in 2017. And unfortunately, about 250 people are believed to have died while making that crossing in January. So still a great concern seeing the number of victims who are losing their lives making this very dangerous journey across the Mediterranean.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Rome. You were listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. In Kenya, tensions between the government and the opposition continue to climb in the wake of Raila Odinga's self-inauguration. And French President Emmanuel Macron and Senegal's President Macky Sall met today ahead of a global gathering on education in Dakar. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The U.S. State Department announced today it would enact restrictions on arms transfers to South Sudan. The arms restrictions will go into effect immediately. Ayan Deng-Bior has more from Washington.
Paul Sutphen, the State Department's senior advisor to the Office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, says this unilateral approach will restrict the flow of deadly arms from finding their way into South Sudan, whether they be intended for government or rebel forces.
What we're trying to do is restrict the flow of lethal material into South Sudan for all parties. And it's not targeted against a particular party, the action we're taking. And we want all the neighbors that you mentioned, all the countries in the region, those other countries that sell a lot of arms, to stop selling those arms or stop into South Sudan. And that's why we want to pursue the multilateral embargo at the United Nations.
In 2016, the Obama administration tried to convince the UN Security Council to approve an arms embargo on South Sudan, but it was not approved. Sutphen says the announcement is part of a series of steps to impose consequences on those who use violence to advance a political agenda. The restriction is enacted through the International Traffic in Arms Regulations, or ITAR, a set of U.S. laws that regulate the export and import of defense-related articles and services.
This is an action we can take with our law for people who require licenses from the United States to sell arms and materiel.
Companies and entities seeking a license to export defense materials to South Sudan will be denied under the new restrictions. This includes American manufacturers or a company that uses American parts that are controlled under the ITAR, according to Sutphen. U.S. law requires companies, entities, or manufacturers seeking to export controlled products to register with the Directorate of Defense Trade Controls, an office in the Bureau of Political Military Affairs at the Department of State. The law also requires an approval of an export license for all exports of a U.S.-controlled defense article or service, according to a State Department official. The U.S. arms restriction will not directly affect the continuing flow of weapons into South Sudan from its neighboring countries. Adama Dieng, the U.N. Secretary General's Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide, confirmed Monday that weapons continue to flow into South Sudan through Kenya and Uganda.
My view is that the situation in South Sudan can't be treated as business as usual, given the magnitude of killings, displacement, and humanitarian crisis. It is about time that punitive measures were applied toward those who impede path to peace.
Sudfin says the State Department hopes the U.S. trade restriction will encourage others, including the African Union and the regional bloc IGAD, to take similar measures.
We need to take a broader approach on this. We need to impose consequences to those parties, including the government, including the main armed opposition group, who have violated their commitment to stop fighting multiple times since they signed it on 21st of December.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley told the U.N. Security Council last week an arms embargo could slow the violence and the flow of arms ammunition to South Sudan. The U.S. arms restriction was enacted just as the second phase of the High-Level Revitalization Forum, an initiative aimed at revitalizing the 2015 peace deal, gets underway Monday in Addis Ababa. Sudfin, who will be at the talks in Ethiopia, says he hopes the arms restriction will send a clear message to the warring parties who have repeatedly violated ceasefire agreements since conflict erupted.
And I think issue number one on the agenda has to be taking the cessation of hostilities and really making it work, stopping the suffering and violence that have racked Sudan, South Sudan, and have sort of injured and killed so many people there. So that is number one on the agenda.
Since the conflict began in December 2013, South Sudan's warring parties have violated 8 different ceasefire agreements, according to the U.S. Institute of Peace. Ayan Dengbior, for VOA News, Washington.
The South Sudan conflict has displaced a third of its population, and the United Nations warns the situation is getting worse. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is trying to overcome a funding shortfall by appealing for more than $3 billion in aid for South Sudan refugees. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, says the agency needs $1.5 billion to support South Sudanese refugees sheltering in neighboring countries. And he says it needs an additional $1.7 billion for those in need inside the country.
We launched this appeal in a context of, unfortunately, yet to be reached peace that has not been reached yet. I would even say of multiple failures, a context of multiple failures to reach peace. For us who deal directly with the people that suffer the consequences of these failures, each one of them is a blow to their hopes, is a missed opportunity to give them a better future.
With the conflict now in its fifth year, nearly 2.5 million South Sudanese have fled to Uganda, Kenya, Sudan, Ethiopia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Central African Republic. Grandi said Thursday in Nairobi that if violence doesn't ease this year, there will be more than 3 million refugees.
So we're talking here about half of the population perhaps soon not living anymore in their homes. This is a proportion that I think in no other country we have seen. And 85% are women and children. So, of course, are exposed to particular risks and carry very acute vulnerabilities. Violence against women, forced recruitment of children.
The UN Refugee Agency says women have reported they have been raped and assaulted, their husbands killed, and their children abducted as they fled their homes. Soldiers on all sides also target aid workers in South Sudan. Mark Lowcock is the head of the UN Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator.
We remain deeply concerned and shocked at the very difficult situation that the international community and the local aid workers are facing as they try to reduce the suffering of people inside South Sudan. Last year, as you will know, 28 aid workers were killed in the line of duty as a result of deliberate acts by men with guns. And hundreds of aid workers, 650 in more than 50 incidents, were forced to relocate.
He welcomes South Sudanese leader Salva Kiir's recent decision to allow humanitarian organizations to operate freely in the world's youngest nation. Lowcock says it is urgent that the order be implemented right away. Humanitarian needs in South Sudan continue to escalate at an alarming rate. Despite this, the UN's funding for the refugee crisis remains low, with only 33% of the required funds received in 2017. After visiting several refugee camps in East Africa, the UN High Commissioner and his delegation had this message to the international community.
My very strong impression, people are losing hope. When I met somebody of my age in Arua district in Uganda earlier this week, and he told me, I've been a refugee four times in a lifetime. This is too much. We cannot accept this. This is what needs to be addressed.
Conflict and insecurity has now forcibly displaced 1 in 3 of the country's population, either within South Sudan or across its borders. Inside the country, some 7 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.